Mr. Hay, Reel 9. Now, we were talking about patrolling, and the first patrol, nothing much happened. What about the second patrol?
Well, the second patrol, we had moved to a different area, and I had more time to reconnoitre the area. I had a full day knowing I was doing the patrol. And so I made inquiries from who had done it before, and I found a chap who had been over this area on Lieutenant Giffrider. And I said, did you find any difficulties? No, he said, there's no sign of anything. And I said, are there any pitfalls that you can... No, he said. So I spent the day with my glasses looping all the ground and knowing, memorizing it, just wanted to go through. And of course, when the patrol boots come in a sack, you hand them out to members of the patrol, you start looking at them, and so they're used to it. They're felt and rubber, so you don't know. And then I organized the patrol. I had an experienced sergeant this time, and the other members were picked for me. The idea was that we had to go forward, not so much to get a prisoner this time, but to probe to see how far the enemy had come forward, what their forward positions were, and I was to fire when I bumped into them, I was to fire a red light and give myself 5 minutes to get out, and then this was the signal for the artillery to come down. We were going along quite very slowly. I found they were staggering a bit, and I found the man with the Ben gun who should have been ready to fire. He was lagging. I didn't think we'd have to use him, but I just wanted him to be there. He was the first one to fire. We were making good progress. I memorized the ground, and then we got beyond where my glasses had taken me in daylight, and suddenly, up confronting us were three or four Germans, and I think there were one or two shots, but what I was conscious of, I could see that they had these grenades in the hand, the ones with the handles, which they threw and exploded, and I said to the Bren gunner, get your gun going. But he wasn't able to fire it for some reason or other. I don't know. My Tommy gun fired two shots and then stopped, and it was a little chaotic. So I said to the man who had the pistol, fire red. He had a red one already in. I said, fire red. And he didn't get that off, so we withdrew. We were being fired on. We didn't have any casualties. But there were certainly, I counted four Germans, and they seemed to be in a set position.
How far away from you when they opened up?
Oh, only 20 yards. So we were right was on top of them.
So you were lucky not to suffer casualties?
Yes.
No one wounded?
No one wounded. So we withdrew, and then we found the very pistol, at least I got the man who worked the very pistol, and the red shot went off, and we got our 5 minutes, and then the artillery came down. But I reckoned it was a set position, it wasn't a patrol.
It sounds like there was a bit of panic, or certainly lack of...
It was a disaster. Well, not a total disaster. We had discovered they were there, and it was a set position that couldn't have been set up that day because I'd had my glasses there all the time. They were keeping the heads down, and that should have been discovered. This is what annoyed me. That should have, and when I
by previous patrols, you mean?
By this kid for that. And by the time I got back there, I said, "How didn't you find?" Oh, he said, "We didn't go that far." So,
but he'd been meant to go that far.
Yes.
Was there a touch of what they called in the First World War shell hole dropping about the battalion, do you think, at that stage? Or?
Well, I hadn't been with them long enough to find out, but these experienced soldiers, I think I get what you mean, took care of themselves. And,
so it was your view that Giftfutter hadn't gone as far as he should, perhaps to avoid running into trouble? Yeah. Which you can either look at as sensible or dereliction, whichever.
Yes.
What did you say to him?
Well, he is a nice lad. We got on well. We became friends because we were friends. He said, "Oh, you don't run into trouble purposely."
But he could have got you killed.
Oh yes. We walked in upstairs. He'd seen these chaps just come up from the ground with their grenades and throw them at it. I marvelled that nobody was hurt.
Did you panic at all, do you think, or were you all right?
No, I was all right. That's the thing that happened, because I was able to say, "Look for this fellow, get your brand gun going." I don't know where the sergeant was, and then I said, "No, where's so-and-so with the very pistol? He didn't seem to be around." In fact, the others had rather gone to ground.
Were there any recriminations about the Bren gunner or the very light man?
I obviously you made a report. I didn't castigate anyone. It was an early patrol. It was my second one, but I learned an awful lot. The first one, I learned, don't listen to these experienced people who say, "I'll go and search for this."
Well, what happened? Could you just tell us that? Because you didn't tell us that on tape. What exactly? That was your experienced corporal, I think, from the first patrol.
And it was only an exploratory.
This was the one where nothing much happened.
Yes. And we just went out along the ground, and this experienced corporal, who was an all, said, I'll just go down here. I think there might be something," and he went away, and it could have been away 20 minutes, half an hour. And then came and said, "No, they've been there, but they're not there anymore." You know, these chaps, as you can smell the Tedeschis, as they call them, and there was a lot of old wives' tales told about that.
So you felt he'd just gone to earth for a bit? So you'd learnt that off the first patrol. What did you learn from the
patrol? Really rely on these soldiers who'd been out there for a few months. I think they had their own way of going about things.
Did you learn anything else?
Not really, except again to make sure that your own weapon was working properly. I remember shot my life when I found out pressing this trigger, and I got two shots out of it, and nothing else happened because the targets were there.
What did it? Why had it jammed? Did you find out later?
It was worn.
This was the old one you'd been. So, did you do any other patrols during this period?
I just took a few men forward to a static position so we could observe down in the valley, but that what you could call a standing patrol, if you like, but it wasn't a fighting patrol. And I think that was the end of my patrol work, because then I was put in command of the company, so I didn't do the patrol.
Now, why were you put in command of the company? What had happened to...
Major Duffy seemed to disappear. I never saw him. And I was the senior lieutenant. And I was told to go to the old groups to represent the company. So, that's what I did.
But you never knew what had happened to Duffy?
Now,
could you explain what went on at an O group for us?
Well, very much depended upon the state of what was going on. An O group should have been an orderly thing with plenty of time to study maps. The CEO would tell you the overall picture, what we were going to do as a battalion, and what other help there was. He would then get the map and give companies their particular jobs. It was a major attack, and you were leading company, you would be allocated the gunner, forward observation officer, and you would be given a target, and you would be told who would follow up, who would be on your left, who would be on your right. But you didn't get much more information because that was your job. You weren't bothered with what else was going on, but you were given a target. And you worked with this gunner OP.
Now, these gunners, they were the same regiment of gunners throughout most of your time in Italy, weren't they? Could you tell me a little about how you developed a relationship with them?
Well, the 70th Field, I think we had 449 battery. The 70th Field, the whole regiment was for the division, and so they had to be split down to brigades and our brigade of three battalions. We had 449 battery, which again was split up, and we generally got the same commanding officer who didn't come forward. He stayed with the colonel, but we did get a forward observation officer with a wireless set, and he relayed back information of how the battle was going. And if we saw a particular target, we used to get them to bring what we called a stunk down on it.
And you had a good relationship. I mean, it's quite a close relationship.
Yes, I think my first real relationship was on Christmas Eve 1944. We were forward. We got into a building, farmhouse building. We went to attack. There was wireless silence, and we were inside this farmhouse thing. We had people stationed outside, but I had a chance to talk to this forward observation officer, and he came from Newcastle. He was at Newcastle University. He was a fellow called Harry Craggs, and so we got on well together. He became a very good friend, and in fact, when I got back from the war, he was already in the accountant's office that I had been in when I left. And I think largely because we met each other a long time, I talked about accountancy. But we're still friends, and you established this relationship. Quite a number of them were decorated because poor souls, they had to come forward, no protection for themselves, and just be at our behest. But they did an excellent job.
Did you ever have trouble with them, perhaps in these early days, with the old infantry complaint of shells dropping short?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, the battery commander, Steve Hudson, was with our colonel, who had picked a place for his four group. And one of the gunner shells dropped short and Hudson was wounded. And he never reckoned it was the fault of the gunners. It was that our colonel had picked the wrong place for his old group, which probably he had. But I knew a lot about this because I came across Hudson in hospital.
Now, during this bit, you were doing some patrolling. Did you actually make any attacks at this point? This is where you were moving. It was the Garigliano you were moving towards.
Yes.
We've noticed since. Yeah. Did you actually make any attacks during this period?
Yes, because after Camino, the way had been opened up to the Calabretta Basin, which was, it was a basin because the mountains on either side, we left this big mountain and this valley was on. But by the same token, you had to command the high ground on either side. Now, all right, we were only responsible for the right-hand side. The Americans were way down on the left. And so you had to move higher and higher up the mountains to keep command of the high ground. And so it was difficult to make attacks. But you had to command the high ground first so that you could attack on the flat. And this is when you had your forward observation officer at his best because he could see where the firing was coming from.
The German firing.
Yeah. And he could... Gradually, we got aerial photographs. These came in where there were rings with numbers on, and they were targets that the artillery had already had sighting. It was all quite slow because the higher up the mountain you got, the worse the conditions were, and you couldn't move easily because it was rocky. But once in a while, you came to a little valley and you could move forward more easily. But it was quiet. There weren't major attacks. Apart from the Garigliano, there were other rivers to cross, which again, this is what the patrolling was about, to see how deep the river was. Would it be necessary to get these assault boats, which were a right nuisance? It was much easier to get in up your necks and just wade across. But this is what patrols were for. Could we wade across? But at that time, of course, conditions were changing because there was an awful lot of rain. The small streams were coming down the mountains and meeting up with these so-called rivers, and so it was getting worse all the time. So you didn't know whether you could wade across a river or you had to take this off course, which were something of a nightmare.
Why were they a nightmare?
Well, unless you've seen an assault boat, it is about 15 feet long. It is flat. You had to pull up the sides. It was teamwork. Fasten them in. There were two paddles, and you got all your kit into this. You launched them with two paddles. Well, it was a lightweight by the time you got eight men, all their kit in. And if the stream was running fast, you had no control, so you didn't get to where you wanted. And so it was much better to do without them and just get in, even if it was meant going up to next and wading across the river.
Now, another job you were doing was helping the sappers repair the Calabrito Cocoruzo track. Again, ready for this push towards the Garigliano. Were you actually involved? Was your company doing that?
Yes. What had happened, of course, in these very, very minor roads on the hills, the Germans had blown any bridges, and bridges were needed. You couldn't always get baby bridges, although these sappers got through amazingly and got bridges over, because there was a main highway, I've forgotten the name, the highway running up the Calabrito Valley, it was the main road up to Rome, going past Casino. But of course, that was a target for anything. You couldn't observe anything moving, you had to move at night. So you used side roads where possible, and the Germans had blown all these bridges. So there were plenty of us. The sappers had to be protected, but then, of course, we lent a hand neighbouring. The lads were glad to do it rather than just sitting around. And so they did quite a bit of neighbouring work as far as well as protecting the working parties of the sappers.
Do you remember any specific operation during this time? You know, of any specific attack or movement? Or is it rather blurred now?
No, it's all quite minor. Quite minor. I wasn't often called to an old group. It was generally to take over from somebody in some obscure place and relieve them. But there weren't any major attacks.
Yeah. On the 21st of December, you took over from the Hampshires at San Carlo. Do you remember that at all?
Well, we were taking over and being relieved all of the time. There was one period where, I think up to 6 weeks, we were what you call in the line, but we weren't firing daily. It was just a holding position, moving up gradually.
Was that on Mount Maggiore?
Yes. Yes, now, we were on the lower slopes, of course, but not right down the top.
Around Pekia.
Yeah.
But not a lot happened. So what would your daily routine be in a time like that as a company commander then? Sort of in the line, but not fighting.
Just getting people to keep their heads down, to observe the firing going on. An occasional aircraft came across, but there was no bombing from the air. You just had to keep your eyes open. The conditions were very tough. The weather wasn't good. The higher up the slopes you got, you built what you call sangers with the rocks. It's a question of keeping warm. Gas capes, great coats, leather jerkins.
Could you light fires?
No. You had the name of the hand tablets that you lit. I think methylated spirits or something.
You mentioned them, yeah. Like Tommy cookers.
Yes. But no fires. And this is why. Very seldom did you get a hot meal coming up, depending on how low we were, because there was probably one just mule track, as we called them. Occasionally, the Indians came up with the mules with what we call compo rations, and of course, they made a hell of a noise coming up, and they were always under fire. So the Germans knew where we were, they knew the Russians were coming up, and they gave us some battle. It was just a question of getting behind these rocks. And
what were the compo rations like? What was the compo ration system?
There were a box, I can't really remember, for about 8 people of the thing. The main thing were the biscuits, margarine, cigarettes, tins of corned beef. Probably rice pudding, and they eventually improved so that you got a tin of steak and kidney pudding or a steam pudding, and they did improve tremendously. They were good, providing you get the heat to them. The food was good.
And you had enough.
The hard biscuits, they tend to ulcerate one's mouth. These hard. You try various ways, melting the margarine and putting them in and just sucking them.
Did you get a rum ration, it being so cold and what?
No.
So after this period on Mount Maggiore, there was a period of flux changing about, which, and then the actual crossing of the Garigliano, I think on 25th of January. What do you remember of all that?
Well, it looked formidable. It was the next stumbling block before Casino. And obviously, we were used to river crossings, sometimes in conjunction with the Americans. Because it wasn't unusual for us to do a river crossing, a minor river crossing, get across the other side, and for the Americans to come in strength, we would withdraw, go somewhere else, and then the Americans would be pushed back. They weren't very good at staying across the river. And, there were quite a few, you call them rivers, but there were probably only 10, 20 yards wide. But they were, had become rivers because of the water coming down from the mountains. And so there were always obstacles. And of course, the Germans had them lined up with their defensive fire. So it was always done at night. And but they weren't what I would call major battles.
You've got to note that there was the Garigliano itself, there's quite fierce fighting and a lot of Nebelwerf of fire.
Well, again, they knew what we were doing. These Nebelwerfers were an eight-barreled mortar, huge things, so that you heard them fire, and then you were going to get eight things exploding round you. And of course, they didn't all explode the same thing. But they were the Germans' best weapon. They caused quite a few casualties, but not devastating casualties. When you heard them, you had warning, so you took cover.
Anything else about that time? Or any incident?
Well, I know we were getting ready for one river crossing, which didn't look to be very good because we had been probing forward. And I'm getting the company ready. And I got a message to say I was to go on leave, which came as a complete surprise because I hadn't been soldiering for more than, I'd say, 2 months then. And so I had a friend called Mackenzie who'd come out from England with me. And I sent word back, I said, oh, is Mackenzie going? And they said, no. I said, well, I'll wait for him. And they said, you'll never wait for anybody or you'll lose, really. So, at very short notice, instead of going that night on this river crossing, I got on a 1,500-weight truck with this second-in-command, John Morant, and we were to go to Sorrento, which was quite a lot of miles away, and I went to the quartermaster. I was only in my battle kit, and he very kindly gave me a new battle dress. So I set off for that, no badges of rank, not much else except my personal shaving kit and so on, probably a bag. We didn't have pajamas in those days. And Moran said, look, our kit is in a place in Naples. We go to Naples and pick up, and we had, when we went aboard, we had these tin trunks with all our English, you didn't take in the line with you. And so I had a lot of things. I said, oh, that'll be great. Well, we spent the Thursday going round Naples trying to find this place, and the end we failed. So then we got to Sorrento late at night and went to this very windy hotel full of Americans, and we were warmly welcomed. I was in this new battle dress, no badges, rank, no insignia, anything, but it was quite a different world. Band playing, full of people, nicely dressed, but they made us very, very welcome, and I had nice there.
You say you got on well with the Americans.
Yes. We didn't too much fighting with them. There were only two British divisions with the American 5th Army, and of course we had to be spared well and about. They were very green, there were lots of them, and they had a lot to learn. We would get across the river, hold the other side, they would come across in their hundreds, seemed like that, and then we would be withdrawn. And it wasn't unusual for the next deal, and 2 days later we had to go and establish the crossing again. They were very prone. I don't wish to be saying anything against them, but the leadership wasn't there. They were easily driven off something.
But that didn't cause trouble when you met them at times like at Sorrento?
Oh no. They couldn't be kinder. They wanted to give you this, that, up in the mountains. If you came across a patrol or something, they were